This is HPR episode 2322 entitled, A Bit of Background on Virtual Wrapper. It is hosted by first-time host BJB, and is about 18 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Linux processes, the process environment, and the shell, as they relate to Virtual Wrapper.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
A bit of background on Virtual End Wrapper, or Linux processes, the process environment, and the shell. Hi, I'm BJB. I've been using Linux for, 20 years now. Knox gave a nice podcast on Virtual End Wrapper. It was timely for me. I was just trying to use it the other day and not finding all the bits and pieces. So thank you for collecting that info into one place. Knox asked why Virtual End Wrapper behaves as it does. Virtual End Wrapper is a combination of bash functions and programs. To understand how it works, you need to know a little bit about bash and Linux. I know there have been some very good earlier and current HPR shows on bash, but bash is a huge topic. The man page for it was 3,500 lines about 10 years ago. Now it's 4,300 plus lines. It has a lot of functionality, and when you're just trying to get something done, it's overwhelming. So in this HPR episode, I will just answer one or two of Knox's questions. It gives me an excuse to make an episode. Also, I'm not going to go too deep into the description in order to keep the podcast short and to the point. I'm just going to cover what is needed. There is lots more depth. There are several shells you could use, and I'm only going to talk about bash. At startup, bash can read more than just the files I mentioned in this podcast. I'm just not going to cover all the possibilities. That's what the over 4,300 line man page is for. If you have questions, ask them in the comments, or make your own podcast and ask them. Maybe you'll get some answers, either from me or from another HPR community member. A program that has no inputs is not flexible or powerful. As a simple example, a program that displays the results of a hard-coded search is certainly useful if you want to know about that hard-coded search term, but a program that can search for a term that you specify at runtime is so much more useful. You do not have to recompile the program to change the search term. Programs can receive inputs in several ways. On Linux and other Unix-like OSs, a program can be run with arguments, read and write to file descriptors, and that includes standard in, standard out, and standard error, and they can receive signals. And they have another input, the environment. That is a bunch of key value pairs that are made available to the program when it starts. Some examples of environment variables are path, home, editor, and pager. The name of the environment variable, for example pager, is the key, and the thing on the other side of the equal sign, like less, is the value. The pair, pager equals less, make up a key value entry in the environment. People who program in C or C++, and maybe other languages, know that the program starts with a main function, and that function has some parameters. The first one is a count of arguments, and the second one is an array of strings, each string being one of the arguments passed to the program when it is launched. There is a little-known optional third parameter, an array of strings that represents the environment. The way the program gets these strings is that it inherits them from its parent process. The parent process of programs that are run from the command line is the command line itself, Bash, or C shell, or whatever your shell is. When the program starts, it gets a copy of the exported parts of the environment of its parent. Bash gives you the ability to set these environment variables and to mark them as available for handing to subprocesses, and that is what is happening when you give that export command. You can view all the currently defined variables that have been marked for export by using the env command with no arguments. ENV, Echo November Victor, or env, short for environment. Since these variables are passed down the generations from parent to child, it is usually sufficient to define it once at the top level. The command line itself is a program called Bash. It reads some files at startup. As an example of the generations, you can call Bash from within Bash, and you can call Bash again from within that Bash. Then the first Bash is the parent of the second one is the parent of the third. The third Bash is the child of the second. You can see the environment changing. Set a variable Fred equals 1 in the first shell and export it. Just give the command export Fred equals 1, and don't leave any space around the equal sign, so it's Fred equals 1 with no spaces. Then run Bash, and in that second Bash you can run echo $Fred, and you can see that the value of Fred is 1. Now you can change Fred to 2 with the command export Fred equals 2, and you can run Bash again, and in the third Bash, if you show the value of Fred, you can see that it has inherited the value 2, echo $Fred. Now you exit Bash with the exit command, and you're back in the second Bash. If you echo $Fred, you'll see that Fred is still 2. But if you exit Bash again, you get back to the first Bash, and you'll see that Fred is now 1. If you echo $Fred, you'll see the value 1. This is the value from the environment that Bash had before you launched the second Bash. The second and third environments are gone. Those Bash processes have terminated, and their environments were cleaned up and removed when they terminated. So you're left with the first environment for the first Bash, and that is an illustration of how that works. In the show notes, there's another example, another exercise to help with understanding this environment thing. When Bash is a login shell, it reads the .bash profile file from your home directory, /.bash_profile. When it's not a login shell, but some subshell of the login shell, it reads the .bashrc file from your home directory, /.bashrc. So for things that you only need to set once, you can put them in bash profile. For things that you need to run for each new subshell, you put them in .bashrc. Most distributions will set up the user accounts so that they'll run .bashrc from .bashprofile for interactive shells, so that if you need something in all your shells, login and subshells, you put it in your bashrc. The path. So the path is one of the environment variables. It is the one that is used by the system to look up the executables. So the system doesn't magically know where the programs are. It looks them up in a predefined series of places, and that predefined series of places is called the path. If you want to run a program, it should be in one of the directories on the path, or you will have to specify the full path to your program when you run it. When you first get your account on a system, there is a default version of the Bash RC and Bash Profile files. In Bash Profile, there should be a definition of the path. It contains the system directories like /user/bin and /bin. You don't want to remove those from your path, or your shell will become next to useless. You'll have to use full paths for all commands. So the way that people add directories to the path is to assign the existing value of path to itself plus the desired new directory. For example, path equals $path colon /home/bjb/bin. That would be me adding my own personal binary directory to the path. But if you put this in Bash RC, then every subshell will have another copy of the directory home bjb bin tacked onto the end of the path. So the right place to put this definition is in Bash Profile, where it will be executed once and then inherited by all the subshells. However, not everything you need in the shell is inherited from the parent program. It turns out that another facility that Bash supplies and that virtualenv uses is the ability to define and execute Bash functions. Bash also has aliases. A Bash function is a series of Bash commands that have been given a name, and that you can run by typing that name. It can also receive arguments that can influence how the function will behave. HPR episode 1757 by Dave Morris, called Useful Bash Functions, talks about Bash functions. You can see the list of currently defined Bash functions by using the Bash command declare space minus capital F. That's capital F like Foxtrot. An alias is a simpler version of a function. It is usually just a shorter string to represent a longer, more complicated command to make command line use easier, assuming you can remember all the aliases in the first place. You can see the list of currently defined aliases by using the Bash command alias with no arguments, and it will list out all the currently defined aliases. Virtualenv wrapper makes use of Bash functions. This has consequences. One is that you need to define those functions in every subshell. That's why you need to put source user local bin virtualenv wrapper.sh in your Bash RC. Well, it seems that on a Debian system, virtualenv wrapper puts the work on shell function into your shell via a more convoluted route. I will describe it in the show notes, but in the end, the virtualenv wrapper file that defines the virtualenv wrapper adds the function work on to your shell by sourcing the file etc. bashcompletion.d virtualenv wrapper whenever bash rc is sourced. Note that a single period is shorthand for the bash source built-in command. The work on function is defined in etc. bashcompletion.d virtualenv wrapper. The definition is about the middle of the file. A description of bash completion could be a topic of another podcast. I'm not actually volunteering to do this one, just suggesting it as a topic. Another consequence is this. When you run a program, it will inherit a copy of the environment of its parent. When it is done, it will exit, and that environment will disappear. So you cannot run a program or subshell to try to affect your environment. It will affect the subshell or program environment, and as soon as the command is done, that updated environment will disappear. The source built-in bash command is meant to allow you to run a bunch of commands in a file as if they had been typed on the command line. So you can put commands that affect the environment, and the environment will still have the changes when the sourcing is done. So virtualenvwrapper is mainly changes to the environment. It consists of a few files that are stored in /.virtualenvs with names like post-activate and pre-make-virtualenv. They are basically hooks to add functionality before and after the commands you would issue for virtualenv, so you can customize virtualenv. To understand virtualenvwrapper, let's have a quick look at virtualenv first. The things you do with virtualenv are to create a virtualenv, destroy one, and activate one. So the things you can do with virtualenvwrapper are to run some script or scriptlet before or after you create a virtualenv, destroy a virtualenv, or activate a virtualenv. The main thing to customize is the where to find the activate file and the what to do after activating post-activate. It does this by setting environment variables like path and Python home appropriately, and by defining bash functions to do things like change directory to where the project is. You just have to edit .virtualenv's post-activate to contain the location of your project file. You also define workon_home to be the directory that contains all your virtualenvs. For me, that is /user/local/pythonenv, but for most people it will be some directory in their home directory. Virtualenv manipulates the environment in order to allow you to have different Python setups for your different projects. So, to summarize, virtualenv manipulates the environment in order to allow you to have different Python setups for your different projects. Handy if you have one project that depends on different versions of Python packages than another project and you wish to run both. But virtualenv leaves a few rough edges, like leaving it up to you to find the virtualenv in order to source the activate script. That's where virtualenvwrapper comes in. We have talked about the environment and how virtualenvwrapper manipulates the environment to make it easier to work with the virtualenvs that you have created. The environment refers to the set of environment variables that are defined and passed to child processes. We also discussed the process hierarchy and that a new environment is created for a new process, and it is destroyed when that process exits. We covered sourcing a file of shell commands so that if those commands affect the environment, then when the sourcing is done, the environment left is the one that was changed, and the changes persist past the source command. We talked about the .bash_profile and the .bashrc files. And now for the HPR exhortation. You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio. Anyone can make a show. If I can do it, so can you. And I look forward to hearing your shows. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.